KMPL.ca virtual newsroom. It's Marty. And again, that's it. That's the last time I'll do this bit. This is the second part of our club-by-club recap of the Island Games. Now going to the teams from the second stage. We've got Pacific FC, Cavalry FC, Forge FC, and Halifax Wanderers. We're talking to our KMPL.ca contributors in each city. And again, if you want to skip ahead to your team, just go down to the description. We've got the timestamps there. It's something I forgot to mention in part one. Go ahead and go on to KMPL.ca to read full reviews of these club seasons, which includes these segments. So, for example, today with Martin Baumann, when this article is published with Pacific FC, we will have the clip with him, and then also again a huge rundown of, you know, the historic moments, the most memorable moments from the season, and again a lot about Pamadou Ka. I just wrote it, so to be fair. And make sure to keep checking back to KMPL.ca. We've got lots of good holiday content coming up over the next couple of weeks, including the year-end quiz, which we have recorded. And again, that will go on Wednesday. Okay, let's get started with Martin Baumann and Pacific FC.
At WestJet, we believe that we can go further together. In today's climate, that means working together to make sure we can all travel safely. Since the onset of the COVID crisis, our teams have been working around the clock to develop and implement new procedures and cleaning protocols to keep you and our crews safe. And this work will continue to evolve. When you're ready to travel again, know that we will be ready too. On behalf of all of us at WestJet, take care and stay well.
Pacific FC, one of the big surprises of the Island Games. They go in, Pamadou Ka, the new coach, obviously Marco Bustos, who's recently re-signed. They look like a promising team, but I don't think too many people were willing to hedge their bets on a team that had, I look like 12 signed players going into the Island Games. It was more like 17 or 18. But the injuries held out, and they make the second round. And sure, the second round wasn't necessarily the best go of it, but they had quite a season. So we have Martin Baumann, our KMPL.ca contributor for Vancouver Island. Let's maybe just start with an overview of how you thought this season went. As sort of a temper check from out there, like everyone's sort of surprised. Was there a little bit more expectation going into this season from your perspective?
I would count it as a success. You know, I think coming into the season, Pacific was the lone club that, axed its coach, had a shakeup there right at the top. And so there was this uncertainty about what's this new look Pacific going to be like. Pacific last year, uncertainty in the locker room, the departure of a guy like Marcus Haber, and some indications of some locker room maybe discomfort there, not everybody happy. So we're trying to figure out what's this club going to be like. Are they going to mesh coming forward? Ben Fisk is gone. What's going to happen with him gone? I think positive indications from the Island Games. Pacific came together as a team. Pamadou Ka became a strong leader for this club. The guys seemed to gel around him. And I don't think anybody was quite expecting them to challenge for the top yet, but for them to show positive improvements and, notch more wins than losses, I think supporters of Pacific and the club can pat themselves on the back.
Yeah, you mentioned, obviously, the new coach coming in, Pamadou Ka, but I kind of want to go a little bit more into detail about that because just, to me at least, his personality and just the way that he kind of conducted himself with the team, with the media, it seemed like this wildly different experience for Pacific FC. Like, how much of this success do you think kind of falls at Pa's feet versus, obviously there is a wider roster rebuild, but was a lot of it down to him, do you think?
I think it starts with him. Absolutely. I think he set the tone for this club in a way that it was not set last season. And I don't want to fault Michael Silberbauer necessarily as being a bad coach, but I think it's fair to say he was the wrong coach for the club. You know, they just weren't a fit for each other. I think Pacific, knowing the direction set by the ownership in Josh Simpson and Rob Friend wanting to play and develop young players, I think maybe there was a bit of reluctance there from Silberbauer. And also maybe just wasn't able to connect with his younger players in a way that Pamadou Ka seems to be able to do. He has the attention of that locker room. And I think he's got the rapport too. I think it helps that Ka had that prior history with a number of those players, whether it's from, you know, FC Cincinnati or whether it's from the Vancouver Whitecaps system. Just being able to have a history with those guys already, I think, makes the work that much easier. And from his intensity on the pitch, I think players bought into that. I think there's a lot to be said about a coach who is as fired up, you know, who's probably the most fired up guy on the pitch, more fired up than his players. I think that sets a tone as well for a team that's looking for a direction and someone to provide them the intensity that they were lacking last year.
We're recording this second week of December, again, just after Marco Bustos has signed. And I think the only player yet to be confirmed from the 2020 roster was Noah Verhoeven, who may move on. But that is still an incredible group to keep. And perhaps Bustos is the biggest piece to that. What could you say about how this team is being built for 2021?
Well, yeah, that Bustos piece was a big one for Pacific, because I think a lot of 2021, for me, in my opinion, hinged on what he was going to do. You know, a lot of speculation about whether Bustos would be entertaining offers and receiving offers from other clubs overseas or wherever they may be. And, you know, I think if the right offer was there, he would have gone. But for Pacific, they could be thankful to get him back, because I don't know if there was a player more valuable to his team than Bustos. You know, I think Becker was the deserving, you know, most outstanding player in the league. But if you're talking about a player who is, you know, integral to, inseparable from the team's success, I think Bustos was that key element for Pacific. He really unlocked their offense in a way that, you know, made Pacific a really dominant and really threatening attacking side.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, it's massive that they've got, I think 18 guys coming back for 2021. Plus, we look at the Pacific have already signed Manny Aparicio, which maybe we can talk about a little bit here too. But just obviously the group stage showed, that the second round of the Island game showed, that there is room for improvement with this team. So where do you think that is? Like, is it just kind of a stay the course thing and they'll improve with the group they have? Or are there maybe spots in the roster that maybe they would want to look at? I mean, and how much does Aparicio address that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think Aparicio being another guy who buys into that same mentality that Pamadou Ka is setting at the top. I think Aparicio, you know, in the interviews I've heard with him thus far, mentioning himself as a guy who's, you know, driven to win, can be a fiery personality. I think you're looking for that intensity on the pitch. I think some of what they've done is simply added competition. You know, Aparicio coming in might give, depending on how you want to form, you know, put your guys on the pitch, it might give somebody like Victor Blasco a bit more encouragement to step his game up. Blasco missed a few sitters throughout the Island games. I think he's had a few that he would have liked to get back. And then from there, it's just the continued improvement of players. I think if anyone is looking to improve on their Island games performance, I would look at a guy like Taron Campbell. You know, breakout season in 2019, you know, 11 goal season, and then became largely invisible at the Island games. And so the question I think I'm wondering now is Campbell closer to that first year season that we saw, or the second? And if it's somewhere in between, then which of the two is he closer to? You know, I think Alejandro Diaz's arrival at Pacific gave them an element that they didn't have before, or they were at least thankful for before, with Campbell's performance flagging. But now Campbell's got to, you know, he's got a challenge in front of him. He's got to say, you know, if this is my team, and if this is my moment to show that I've still got it and that I deserve more time, he's got to be able to produce.
Campbell getting his lone goal of the Island games in that final second round blowout of the already advancing Halifax Wanderers. You're not allowed to say that moment, Martin, but what was for you the pinnacle of the Pacific FC Island games campaign? Because again, they've had you know, there's the Bustos, multiple Bustos goals come to mind. Obviously some impressive performances in the first round. Like, what was that one moment for you that you just thought, wow, this team has it?
You know, that's a tough question to answer for me. I think one, you could point to any time that Pacific, I guess first response would be Pacific. It came at a loss, but Pacific taking Forge to the end and conceding such a terrible last minute goal, 94th minute, what was it? But to be able to hang in there as long as they did, that was a positive indicator that it looked like, they were at the class level of a club like Forge FC, and maybe that, they've still got some work to do. I think the other moment that sticks in my mind as a real, key one from the season was Pamadou Ka speaking as candidly and refreshingly as he did during the Black Lives Matter movement. For him to be able to emerge as a leader, both within the club but also within the league. And, I think that won over a lot of fans, just realizing what a great ambassador they have in Pamadou Ka for this league, and a guy who, I think coming out and speaking like that, his players, how can you not, go to bat for a guy like that after a speech like that?
Yeah, I would, like, even just in press conferences, you'd sometimes hear you'd hear Pa talk, and you'd be like, "Man, where's the nearest wall? I gotta go run through it."
mm-hmm. He has that effect on people, it seems.
I don't know. I think you'd have to consider the whole 2020 experience for Pacific on the whole a success, right? I mean, given the turnover and compared to the year before, I mean, like, just looking back on it as a whole, I mean, like, it, I don't think you could have really asked for much more of an improvement and a refreshing showing from them, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, kudos to the CPL for introducing this Final Four concept. It makes things more interesting for clubs in Pacific's caliber. But for them to make that Final Four and give themselves a shot, even if that, they fell short in the end of making it to that CPL Finals, just proving that they're able to take that next step in stringing together enough wins to get to that stage, that shows some resilience. They still have to be able to prove that they're not going to concede as many penalties as they did this year. There's some discipline, I think, that they need to continue to clean up. But I think you saw improvement across Pacific. If you look at a guy like Matthew Baldissimo, I think he's a great example of a guy who stepped up big time from year one to year two, showed massive improvements. I think Caden Chung, similarly, you can look at him as a guy who's continued to improve steadily. And that's encouraging. I think that's exactly what you want to see from a club that has given a lot of time to guys aged 21 and under. There are two of them right there who have benefited greatly from that and have taken that trust and proven it's worthwhile. So I think that is the positive sign for me, that those guys, those, homegrown guys, if you want to call them that, of Baldissimo and Chung and their ilk, have done as well as they have and have turned into, I think, pretty steady, reliable players. And that paired with the additions of somebody like Bustos, somebody like Diaz, now somebody like Aparicio, I think you have a foundation there. And that has given Pacific something really strong to build on for this coming year.
What are you most, before we let you go, what are you most looking forward to at West Hill Stadium 2021? Is the food good there?
I mean, just, the media room food is pretty good. They occasionally bring in sushi. I guess that's a West Coast thing.
Yes, I love that.
I think just for anyone who has missed seeing, a real soccer game in person, just the stadium itself, any kind of atmosphere, as fantastic as the Island games were, and that was a really wonderful product that they were able to put together in a short amount of time, and I'm sure with in such an unpredictable year that it's been, just to be able to see some real games in person in the flesh, fingers crossed, that is going to be a really welcome return to being able to head out to West Hills and catch some action.
Brilliant, Martin, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Cavalry FC. We're now to this part of the show where we have to talk about the team that could have been in 2020 at the Island Games. We're joined by Sandra Persina in Calgary. Sandra, Charlie and I were just talking before we hit record here. It's just like, what happened? You know what I mean? Yeah. And obviously we're probably gonna have to talk about the injuries almost right away, but it really was going into that second round, you know, they were the team to beat. I mean, maybe that's the question, is what happened to Calvary FC in 2020 on PEI?
Yeah, you struck it right there. Injuries, I mean, completely decimated, and they just couldn't do anything at that point. They had already adjusted so much given the players that didn't make it to Canada and already had gone through so much here in Calgary in terms of not being able to practice. And when they were able to practice, there were only small side games. So by the time they got into the groove, and I was really happy how they came out of the gate there at the Island Games, but just injuries absolutely decimated. And there's only so many changes and so much depth that a coach can deal with. So I thought they put their best foot forward as far as they could, but it just wasn't meant to be this year.
Yeah, there was really only so much Tommy Wheeldon Jr. could do. And I think he said that to all of us when we asked several times. Was there maybe a turning point during the Island Games where they kind of didn't, like, it was clear that they weren't maybe the team they were last year just because of guys missing and things felt a little different?
I think that's a really good question. And I think just from the start, I didn't see as much chemistry as I saw a year prior. And you knew that things were going to be different. Obviously, Dominic Malongo wasn't here. And then you had Jose Escalante, who wasn't able to get into Canada because of the pandemic. And those are two key pieces that just weren't there. And we were so used to them and what they could bring, especially toward the end of a match. And they could be that key piece that would take you over the hump. And I just felt that Cavalry couldn't get over that hump this year. And something that Cavalry boasted a year prior was the depth on that back line. And I thought the back line wasn't as crisp as it was a year ago. So those were the two key standouts to me. I certainly don't want to use, and I don't think that they would want us using injuries as an excuse, but I think when Oliver Minutel went down and the way that he went down, it was just so shocking. Just as a person and knowing the impact that he has on that club and what he's brought during his tenure here in Calgary, and to see him go down the way he did with such a severe injury. And I think it was amplified in terms of literally and figuratively where you have no fans in the stands. So you hear the pain that he's going through. And I certainly wasn't there, but I could hear it on the television and it was atrocious. And I think that was a shock to the system of both the players and Oliver, obviously, but they just never really recovered from that point, I thought, at least.
Well, there was also the injury that Nico Pasquati sustained was also tragic in its own sense, right? Just having to leave, and he knew. And, you know, at that point, when you're that late in the tournament, you can kind of see what was going to happen to Calgary FC.
Yes.
So what's the bright spots? I think we have to talk about Mo Farsi for sure.
Oh, goodness,
that'll definitely come up. But like, what for you, again, as much as this could be seen as a disappointment, still made the second round, still tons of good things to talk about. So what were some of the big bright spots for you?
I'd like to give credit to the team as a whole, just credit for adapting, because it really, particularly here in Alberta, it just took a while for these restrictions in the spring to get lifted. They could only do these small side practices and they couldn't go all in. So I think the fact that they were able to build off of that was huge. And of course, they missed out on Jose Escalante, Richard Luca. Luca, a bit of an unknown commodity in the CPL, but Escalante is not. So you know what you're getting from him. His goal scoring was missing, but I also think his gamesmanship was missing. He's one of those pests known across the league. He knows how to get under everybody's skin. And I thought that was missing from the team, but they did adapt well to not having them there. A bright spot for me, and I didn't know what to expect from him, was Marcus Haber. He was a bit of a wild card, I thought, coming into the season. But I think his performance was good for both the team and for himself, for the further of his career, because he proved that he's got a bit of gas left in the tank. And I think the team was really grateful to have him in the fold, because as we've talked about, those injuries really mounted, and he was able to be that veteran and guide the team to a little bit of goal scoring, which obviously they were lacking.
So I guess now the question is, what do you do now if you're Calvary? I mean, they've already made a couple additions. I think Joe DiChiara is a huge one that we should probably talk about. But in terms of the guys that are coming back from the past squad, do you think there's just enough there that in a healthy, longer season, like, they should just be completely fine with that group?
I think that the losses of Jordan Brown and Nathan Mavilla in particular are huge. For Jordan and Nathan, they've been key contributors both on and off the pitch. I can say that they have been absolutely wonderful in the Calgary community, giving back to kids, to other clubs, spending their time. And I'd also like to really highlight the leadership that they showed during the Island Games. It was tremendous. I can't imagine how difficult it was for them to share their battles. I don't know what it's like to walk in their shoes, and for them to relive some of those moments that they've had as Black men here in Canada, back across the pond at home, and for them to share that with us, to open up to an entire country and a soccer community, I think we're so much better for it. And I just think those departures are a loss for the team, the Calgary community, and the Canadian Premier League as a whole. So that to me really is glaring.
No, I was just going to say, they're just complete leaders. Again, we've talked about it previously, but we've gone as far as to thank Nathan and Jordan for what they did on PEI, because again, it can't be understated, and I'm glad to hear that even in Calgary, that effect has been shown.
Absolutely.
Huge. And even before this season, I know Jordan and Nathan have been so involved and working with a lot of the young players, the Timbits players here in Calgary, and just giving up their time and just their mentorship. I think that's huge. And that's what builds those grassroots. That's what really builds a league like the Canadian Premier League, and especially in a city like in Calgary with Cavalry. In terms of, we really are such a grassroots city. Like, it's a city of 1 million+ people, but we're very small community based still. There's still that mentality. So not to have them here, I think, it's going to be a real absence. So I know there are players who can step up in that sort of an aspect, and I look forward to seeing who that will be in 2021.
And then maybe one final thought just on what are some of the holes to be plugged in, and just looking ahead to the next season. Like, you know, again, we know that Tommy Beilden Jr. is a great coach. We know that he can build teams, and now you're kind of forced with a little bit more of a transition than normal. I just wonder where the team can go. Where do you think, is the next step for this club?
I think the future is a little bit muddy, and for the reasons that you said. I mean, there's injuries and there's key departures. There are key people coming into Calgary, but we don't really know what they will bring. I think it's fair to circle back on Mohamed Farsi. Obviously, he won a bunch of awards. He took the tournament by storm, I think it's fair to say. And full disclosure, I didn't know a whole lot about him coming into this season. I had heard his name before in soccer chats and like across social media and stuff, but I'd never really seen him play. And I think if we can have games again, knock on wood, he's going to absolutely elevate the passion of Spruce Meadows. I can't even imagine what he's going to be like to be able to see him in person. So his young age, his skill level, what he can bring, his tenacity, I think that is something so, so great to look forward to. One of those things I'm kind of curious about, though, one of those absences and departures is Nico Giansopoulos. And I'm thrilled for him, obviously, to be closer to home and to be able to play in front of his family and friends. But I think he was one of those really ideal second goalkeepers, and in a sense where he pushed Marco Carducci to be a better goalkeeper. And we know what you have with Marco. I mean, his bar is set really, really high. But with Nico, he pushed Marco to be better. And I'm curious to see if they can bring in another goalkeeper who you can throw in at the drop of a hat, whether it be giving Marco the night off, or if we're playing league play versus the championship. I'm just really curious who they will bring in as a goalkeeper and be that solid number two, because Nico set an exceptionally high bar both on and off the pitch.
Mm-hmm. Okay, before we let you go, what are you most looking forward to for returning to Spruce Meadows?
That's a great question. Well, I do know that the lighting has been fixed. The lighting is going to be better.
Wait, there's going to be more than one light?
Yes, there's going to be better lighting at Spruce Meadows.
I hate that.
And hopefully the schedule makers of the Canadian Premier League realize that maybe those late kickoffs, although that was a championship game, so maybe that is out of the hands of the Canadian Premier League. So I take that, that's my mulligan, I take that comment back. But I'm just, Calgary has always been known as a hockey city. And what I'm really looking forward to is building on what 2019 brought us here. And what that brought was Calgary being a sports city, and something that we've struggled with a little bit, other than the Stampeders here and there. And maybe when they win a Grey Cup, people get on the bandwagon. But to be able to have a successful soccer team is huge. And to have local players, Marco Coducci and Dominic Zator, Nick Ledgerwood is a Southern Alberta product, and I'm sure that he's going to be giving his thoughts after he hangs up his cleats. I know he's getting involved here with the Calgary Rangers, another football club in the city. I'm just excited to see everybody back and building on the success of 2019. I know it sounds super homery, but as a Calgarian, they brought so much to this city, and to see the leadership of Tommy Wheeldon Jr. coming to fruition after he had worked so hard and so long with Foothills. So let's build on that.
Mm-hmm. Well said, Sandra. Wonderful. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
So we've reached almost the summit, the final of the Island Games between the Halifax Wanderers and the other team, which we'll get to next. The focus is on the Wanderers, who surprised many people, going 4-3-3, I believe, Charlie. And they made the final after winning the Wooden Spoon the year prior, joint winners. We're joined by Jonathan Briggins, our writer out in Halifax. Maybe the first question is, did you expect this? Because the way the Halifax has reacted to this, everyone was obviously so excited to have such a, you know, a well-supported team and a cornerstone of the league, like, make a big jump like this. But were you personally surprised by the Wanderers' run?
I was surprised to see them make the final. I wasn't surprised to see them play better than they did in the first season, mostly because it's hard to get any worse than last place, even if the league adds another team like they did with Ottawa. But I was surprised to see them make it that far. As the tournament went on, I sort of started thinking, hey, this could be an option. And just as they kept playing, it's like, okay, this team is special. It's not a fluke, just one or two games. Like, they're really putting a solid run together here.
Was there a point in the Island Games where, I know that you're quite close with some of the fans out there and the supporters group, but was there a point where everyone kind of turned around and thought, like, this is real?
Well, I know for me personally, and I think a lot of fans would agree with this, the game against York 9, when it started off, like, first of all, going to the game with kind of a new hope, with Christian Ochsner playing better, big game, and then the Morelli red card happens, they're kind of down, it's looking like, oh no, here we go, like, full collapse. But then they get that late winner kind of out of nowhere, and it's like, okay. So they just did that. Yes, it's a draw, not all 3 points, but this was looking like a 0 point game and they got something out of it. And I think for a lot of people, that was a big moment because it just showed that they weren't going to collapse. I mean, look how many times you're watching soccer around the world and teams are thrown some adversity and it just seems like they're fighting an uphill battle the whole time. What they showed in that game was that even with just 10 men on the field, they can still kind of play how they want and be brave and dig in.
Yeah. So if you improve that much in one season, I mean, obviously it's jumping ahead to expect the same improvement next year, but like, what do you think is next for this team? Like, how do they maybe get over the hump and maybe get a little bit more up there with the likes of a Forge next year? I mean, cause you gotta improve on this as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think from the get-go, Steven Hart's been very realistic in how he's constructing this team. He knew last season he wasn't going to come out and win the league. And I think with the short format of the Island Games, he kind of knew anything can happen in a small tournament and wanted to be competitive. But I think this is all part of kind of a bigger plan of establishing a local culture here, just where that wasn't really in the city. There's no like youth academy or anything that some of the other teams have access to. So Hart kind of had to start with nothing. And I think that this year was just kind of affirmation that there is a plan. And even though things didn't look good after 1 year, they were definitely headed in the right direction. And I think from what we've seen in this off season, just the players that are coming back, like that core is back for most of those players are back for another year, 2 years, and a lot of club options for additional years. So I think what they're doing here is showing that like this is a standard of the club. You go and you play hard every game. You play for each other. I think that was a big thing we saw this year. There's a lot of unity. Maybe that was from hanging out in a hotel together for so long and not having kind of your normal day-to-day life. But I think the club is really established for moving forward.
I'm glad you brought that up because, as you mentioned, Jonathan, like the amount of players they've had re-signed, I think it's around like 13, something like that. And it's slowly been trickling out on their website. But yeah, most of them 2 or 3 years. Like Akeem Garcia is on a 2-year guaranteed contract, a player of the year. We just had Marco Busso signed for Pacific for 1 year. You know, like to have that type of stability is quite a thing. What do you think is like, what's an improvement on the field that do you think this team could use? Because the way that they played at the Island Games is obviously quite unique. They had some incredible skills, especially going forward. But like, what's one or two pieces you'd like to see added that you think would be added?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because we definitely did see potential in all areas of the pitch over the Island Games. And especially after the first season, you couldn't really point towards a strength. So I think it would be nice if they could maybe get a little more consistent goal scoring. They seemed so reliant on Garcia. And yes, Morelli was there, and he definitely provides an element, but it would be nice for the team to have these moments where they're not just fighting for the 1-1 draws. It just feels like over their first two seasons, there have been so many games that are super tight, and it would be nice for the team to find a way to break it open a little more and just be able to clamp down after they get a lead.
The one thing that's kind of sticking out to me, just looking at what's happened for the club in the last, I don't know, month, 2 months, they have lost like guys at the fullback position. They've lost Ensa, obviously, and Alex DeCarolis was released. For a team that wants to play kind of the way that they did with the counterattacking and the pressing and the transition, that's an important spot. So like, is that maybe something that you think they'll be okay with? Like, how do you think they cope with losing, especially Ensa, who had a really good Island Games?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. And with Ensa, I mean, he was definitely a breakout player on the team. His first season, he was more of a utility player. He ended up playing some in the midfield, could kind of play wherever on defense. And he ended up just kind of taking that spot on the wing and running with it. But I think with Santos joining next year, I think that's going to make a big difference on the defense. And it's hard to say what that defense is going to look like with another defender there, despite losing a couple. So they definitely will need to sign more on defense, but it seems like they're headed in the right direction. But what we saw at the Island Games, I mean, having Shallow back, like that's huge. So I think there's always room for improvement on defense, and especially if you're going to have a full season and injuries are going to happen, they'll definitely need some cover there.
Not to take anything away from Halifax, but they did go to the Island Games with genuinely two center backs. And they made it. They survived. So when other teams faltered, like we already talked about Cavalry, the Wanderers survived. I wanted just to end this, Jonathan, but just talking about the club as a whole, because we've talked like 10 minutes already, and we really haven't gotten the idea that, like, how many people showed up to the Wanderers grounds this summer to watch this team play? Thousands, right? Socially distanced, of course. And the amount of support that has been out there is, for many, I mean, for me, it's unparalleled in Canadian sport, right? It sort of defies people's expectations of the league. So, like, I don't know where the question is here, but what does this really mean for the city of Halifax to have a team that very much coming into 2021 could win a championship and bring a professional championship to Halifax in God knows how long?
Yeah, I mean, you brought up the watch parties there at the Wanderers grounds. And I mean, Atlantic Canada was very lucky over the summer to have kind of some looser restrictions in many parts in Canada and be able to arrange things like that socially distant and be safe. So it was nice that fans were at least able to do something. But it's one of those things where, you know, it was such a shame. There seems to be such a connection between the fans and the club, even though they haven't properly met, which is quite special. I don't know. Seems very, very 2020 that you can have that connection without actually spending time together. But I think that just shows that Halifax will be able to recruit players. And I just think of Morelli, like, he was posting on social media kind of like Halifax was a second home already and how excited he was to be back for another season. And it's like, he hasn't even been able to get the full Halifax experience. Like, there's so much more for these players to like. So I think that bond between the club and the fan base, just it got strong, even though they couldn't be together in person. And I think that's going to serve the club well moving forward.
What is the craziest Halifax Wanderers fan story that you've heard on the ground in Halifax? We heard about, like, fans having, like, just texting Chris Nvekensa, just like, "Hey man, good job." Like, what, like, how crazy does it get? And what is, like, one story that sticks out to you?
Yeah, well, I think that's a very Halifax thing. Halifax just seems so small, and maybe this is kind of too silly, but for example, my wife, she does spin classes, and she was messaging with, like, Akeem Garcia, basically being like, "Oh, you should come, like, exercise in the morning," and he was kind of like, "It's a little bit early," and you keep hearing stories like that from fans and players, where it's like, it's like the players are just your buddies and you're like, "Hey, you want to go work out or you want to come over for dinner?" Like, that's a very East Coast thing. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but I think it just helps everybody bond and feel comfortable. And, like, if players are feeling at home in Halifax, I think that's going to reflect on the pitch and their performance.
So we've saved the best team for last. We haven't saved the best guest because there is no guest. Charlie and I have talked about Forge enough over the past 6 months or so, specifically since October. They're in the CONCACAF League, and a run that ended just this month, quite unceremoniously. We've talked a lot about the loss to Marathon on the regular podcast, but this is about 2020. So, how would you summarize 2020 for Forge FC, Charlie? We were kind of already talking about it. It can get boring to talk about Forge at times, but in the best way, because they're just doing it. They're just proving it over and over and over again. So, what do you think what do you think the storyline for Forge is this year?
I think really up until the very, very end, like maybe the last game of the season, it was just steady, reliable, consistent upwards trajectory, right? Mm-hmm. Like they were better every game than they were the game before. They just, like throughout the Island games, I mean, they had moments where there was some kind of things didn't go their way. I mean, they lost once, but I mean, every single time, like they never seemed worried about anything. They never seemed particularly phased. Whenever we talked to Bobby Smyrniotis, he'd kind of shrug it all off and be like, yeah, we know what we need to do and we're just going to do it. And mm-hmm. at the end of the day, in the CPL at least, they did. And it wasn't particularly flashy all the time. It was just extremely effective.
Yeah, especially during the Island games, especially during that short format, I just kept thinking while watching that Forge has an upper hand just from a level of confidence. Because people talked about how Forge and Cavalry in 2019, they were the teams that were derived from previous iterations of other clubs, right? For Sigma, mostly Sigma, and then Foothills. Where you sort of think that a lot of people would say, okay, that does make sense, and that, you know, that they know each other. But I think for 2020, it was that they know each other, plus they have the confidence that they are the defending champions. Because you think about a game like the final against Halifax, right? How Forge was able to control that game for large swaths of it, and they very rarely ever gave a team much. Maybe against Halifax in the second round, but there was kind of that quiet confidence that I think really was the difference. Because again, every team had quality there, and Halifax included, but they just could see games out, like you said. And you know, if I'm Kyle Becker, like getting a late run in to the box against Pacific FC in like the 98th minute or whatever,
yeah,
whatever that was, and just like, yeah, obviously they were going to win that game. You know, it just, I think they just had the confidence in knowing they could do it, right?
Yeah, they always played a lot cooler than you might expect. Even if it was a close game and they just kind of squeaked it out, they're like, yeah, we always knew that was going to happen. I think something that worked in their favor is definitely more so than Cavalry. They were like their club's identity on the field, at least, was the exact same as it was in 2019. I mean, minus Tristan Borges, I guess, who was a big loss, but it turned out not to be that big of one, because they were still fantastic this year. I think against CPL teams, they're the team that's been there before, and they kind of have that air. I mean, we can talk about that in a very different context in terms of the CONCACAF League. But just in CPL games, especially in that final, they just have this air of competence and experience, which maybe they don't even, like, maybe they haven't necessarily even earned, because they've only been in existence for a year, but they are the guys that have been there and just feel confident that they're the best team in the league, and they prove it pretty much every time they play another CPL team.
Let's dive into CONCACAF League just from looking back now. We're a couple weeks removed from that wrapping up, but we wrote quite a bit the day after, Charlie, just about how this was not a failure. I think that with how it was set up, with the fact you were playing Arakai first, and people, you know, us included, thought, hey, you know what, there's a great chance for this. You know, it still made it to a quarterfinal, and it's, I don't think another CPL team could have done it. So like, I still see that as being a massive, massive success, especially for taking the team into 2021, right? You know, you're playing in CONCACAF League again. Heck, there's going to be players that want to play in that, right? So, I mean, how do you summarize that campaign now looking back?
Yeah, I think the further we get away from kind of that first week of December where they lost those two games, we can kind of see the whole thing in a little bit more perspective. Because at the time, I mean, after they lost to Marathon, it felt awful. Like it was a devastating game to lose, especially in the way that they did. But you look back at it, they beat one of the best teams in the region in Taro. They played some excellent football against Limeño, And they did all of that, all of those things, even playing very close contests against Archai and Marathon. They did all of this as their only four games in like 2.5 months while also traveling to like, including like layovers. It was like 5 or 6 different countries. And there were 2 weeks in there where they weren't even able to train because they were quarantined back home. Like it, if you take all of it into perspective, it really is incredible just that they were able to get to where they did. And I mean, no other CPL team is going to have anywhere near that sort of experience heading into the future.
People like to talk about David Edgar's post-game quotes about the good old-fashioned ding-dong or whatever. But my favorite quote out of that was, again, he's on webcam from Honduras, and he seemed, his tone in his voice, he was just almost in disbelief. He's like, we had more of the ball tonight. He's like, that never happens with a team like ours that comes down here. He was just like, I'm incredibly proud. We had more of the ball. We had more shots. And like, again, as much as that game was painful, and I mean, I wouldn't go as far to say the Forge was in control of that game by any stretch, but they had more possession than Marathon. And again, you just kind of sit there and think of how far they've come and how much farther they can go, specifically into 2021. David Edgar won't be there. Obviously he's retired, but like, where do you see from a general squad building standpoint this team go? Because it wouldn't surprise me, honestly, if Bobby Smyrniotis maybe cut a few players and tried to bring some guys in, because now we're 3 years into a league. There is one big team, and now you're starting to talk about having genuine CONCACAF League aspirations, right? You're able to go to a player that maybe was pretty good on a team like, you know, I don't know, any CPL team, Val or whatever, and say, look, here's where we are. You can maybe play like a role, a specific role off the bench, whatever. But like, this is what this team has now become. And I think that might be how it goes. I'm curious what you think will happen to the Forge team going forward, recruitment wise and team building wise.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. Like, just on your last point there, it's such an easy thing to sell, just the whole CONCACAF experience. Because I mean, like, if you look at it this way, Forge was one win, not even a full win. They were a couple penalty kicks away from hosting like Club America or something at Tim Hortons Field next year.
Yep.
Or a massive MLS club or any other like Liga MX giant. Can you imagine that? So if you're a player in a CPL, it's just such an easy sell for you, because you look at this team and you're like, they are fully intending on getting to the CONCACAF Champions League the next year. I guess it would be 2022. But there are definitely, like, they're not a perfect team by any stretch, and there are obviously places where they will need to improve. I mean, obviously you have to replace David Edgar, which is a massive undertaking. And you probably need more than just one new defender, because I don't know if you can necessarily rely on Daniel Crutzen and whoever you get to replace Edgar to play every single minute, right? Of a especially a longer season with presumably possibly other competitions spread out throughout it, if everything goes well in 2021. And there are other places where I think they would want to strengthen. I mean, the finishing ability, they could maybe use a guy that's a little bit more consistent at finishing off those chances. I mean, as many goals as they scored, they probably would be the first ones to tell you that they could have scored tons more if they'd been just a little bit more clinical in the box. And then the other thing that sticks out to me, I mean, you look at the international players, and are they using those spots as well as they could? I think that's maybe another question to think about. I mean, I think there's probably a very long debate to be had about Paulo Sabac, I thought was good, pretty good at times. But I mean, it'll be kind of an interesting decision whether they keep him on or maybe go a different direction with that spot in midfield. Maybe look for somebody a little bit more creative. I don't know. I don't know. There are a lot of roster decisions to make, and I think there might even be a little bit more done to this team in this offseason than maybe there was last year.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, Charlie. Even for if we could talk about Sabak briefly, he made our top 23 under 23 list, and I was a little surprised to see him as high as he was. I think he was in the top 15 or something. I'm curious if maybe I'm thinking too much, like, you know, the impact that Tristan Borges had. But you're right. I think there are some very big decisions to make, even on some of those depth players that they have. Because for me, Maxime Tissot is the smartest player in Canadian soccer this year, because he probably took a pay cut to come to Forge. He definitely had other opportunities in the CPL. We knew there were offers out there, but he waited and he thought, you know what, I'll just, you know, there's obviously the uncertainty of the pandemic, but I'll just take a pay cut and go with these guys. Well, he's just played into December. And, you know, he's played on the best team in the CPL, right? I think that kind of pull is going to be what will bring in that next generation of players, which will only force other teams in the CPL to step up their game, I guess.
So that's a great point. I think Forge are probably able to attract a kind of player that other teams can't. Like the Tissots of the world and the Baboulis and so on and so forth. And that's going to be huge for them, I think, going forward.
Can they three-peat?
Absolutely they can.
Right? That's the thing. It's for me, depending, this is a long off season. Who knows what 2021 is going to bring, but I think people were pretty quick to jump on teams like York or Halifax or Pacific even. But like when it came down to it, it just they're too good. Like I said, it's boring to talk about because what else are you supposed to say? Bobby, give us something else. Give us something else.
At WestJet, we believe that we can go further together. In today's climate, that means working together to make sure we can all travel safely. Since the onset of the COVID crisis, our teams have been working around the clock to develop and implement new procedures and cleaning protocols to keep you and our crews safe. And this work will continue to evolve. When you're ready to travel again, know that we will be ready too. On behalf of all of us at WestJet, take care and stay well.